Good evening, Rink Rats. Hope you are all well. Welcome to Season 8, Episode 17 of the Rinkcast, the final regular season Rinkcast of the 2024-2025 mildly entertaining Chicago Blackhawks season. Entertaining because of one player and a bunch of pickups and a lot of talk about the future. Not entertaining as far as on-ice product. And tonight probably won't go well against the Los Angeles Kings, but then it's time to look towards the offseason. Tonight, we're going to talk about your hacks. We're going to get into the season. We're going to talk a little bit about next year. And we have a guest. Tonight, we will be welcoming Ford Hatchett from ABC 15 in Phoenix, Arizona. Ford Hatchett is a broadcast journalist who has been covering the sale of the Arizona Coyotes, recently sold. It was official today to Utah, the Utah somethings. We still don't know what they're going to be called, but they've already sold 6,000 season tickets or deposited 6,000 season tickets. We don't know if they're going to be the Venom, the Blizzard, or the Hockey Club or whatever. At any rate, I'm talking too much as always. Good to see all my friends. Sean Fitzgerald, Eric Andrews, Jimmy O'Malley, almost Esquire. It's coming. And the Bardo. Hi, guys. What's going on? What's up? Hey, 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 hey. Sean, what are you wearing tonight? You're always dressed for the occasion.
Whoa. I have a Blackhawks throwback sweater on, and I have my Monmouth College hat. It is Founders Day, where I went to school. So the...
Bye, Sean. everybody. Eric Andrews, you also have a hockey jersey on, and what are you wearing in honor of a now defunct hockey club? Is that what I'm seeing?
That is correct. I am tying the halves of our show tonight together by wearing a Nicholas Jalmerson game-worn Coyotes jersey.
Oh, nice.
That's actually a pretty choice. That's pretty choice. Sean is back, ladies and gentlemen. For the record, I did not turn him off. His hamsters, nope. His wheel fell off. He had to pick them up again, put them back on, and now he's back. Marquette University, soon-to-be law graduate, Jimmy O'Malley, second podcast with us. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey, I mean, I'm doing great. Hockey season's coming to a close, so we don't have to be tortured by
that. And he's on mute.
Much longer.
He's not on mute. I can hear him.
Oh, I am. Maybe no, Sean. You're good.
You're good.
This
Sean,
is on what? You, man.
Come Sean, on. This is a really tough start.
Show some professionalism.
Really tough start.
Come You've on. Got mail. Sean, you got to get the updated version. Come on. Yeah,
Jimmy, you were really saying important stuff, and we apologize as a group on behalf of Sean.
I mean, I appreciate just being important because obviously that's why I'm here. But I mean, it's great to have that feeling of excitement going into an off season where we'll probably get into it later, but Blackhawks can go in many directions, many of them probably good for the future of the franchise, but very much a lot of intrigue. And we'll see how Kyle Davidson goes into another draft, another free agency spectacular.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Jimmy's going to have some hot takes on this tonight. He's already taken notes. We're excited. And how's the bar doing?
Good. I'm wearing Prada tonight. No, I'm just kidding. I'm wearing a
no hamster wheel.
I'm wearing some Chiefs stuff tonight, of course.
Oh, there he goes.
Blackhawks. So, yeah, wearing a little bit of everything. I'm all over the map, as everyone says. So
I like it. Andrew Bard, welcome. Good to see you.
Likewise.
Andrew Bard's awesome son was catching up with us briefly online before we started the show. Dylan, I hope you're listening out there. It was good to see you today, man. So let's talk Hawks. All right, Hawks, final regular season game tonight, 10:30 Eastern, 9:30 Central in Los Angeles, a team where they've not been able to score against this year. And so we're expecting a very large 1 to 1.5 goal output from our beloved Chicago Blackhawks with their handful of players that can do things. They've locked in the 2 seed. 2 seed from the bottom, that is. Blackhawks are second to last in the NHL. They will finish second to last in the NHL. It'll be official tonight where they secure the second best odds in the draft lottery to try to obtain their second consecutive number one overall pick to add to the prospect pool that is deep. Speaking of prospect pools that is deep, recently, we haven't talked about him yet, Frank Naser. Do not call him Frank Naser the third unless it's on the back of his jersey. We learned that at the end of the college hockey season. It was getting kind of annoying. The Blackhawks 2022 13th overall pick from the University of Michigan signed right after University of Michigan was bounced out of the Frozen Four by the eventual runner-up Boston College Eagles. They lost 4-0. Nazer wasted no time. He signed with the Blackhawks the following day. He scored in his first goal. If you didn't see it, it was a beauty. He's played two games, and he looks pretty darn good. Early thoughts on Frank the Tank. Eric, start us off. I'd say Sean, but we don't know the status of the hamsters.
True. That's true. I'd be happy to start. I've been very pleasantly surprised. I mean, everybody knows that he has the skill and the talent to produce offensively, but to see it immediately translate and for him to be very noticeable in both games, I feel like, especially the Vegas game, he was buzzing around all night. So, yeah, the fact that he just stepped in pretty much on a moment's notice and has been a very effective player offensively is certainly encouraging. I mean, of course, it's a two-game sample size at the end of a season.
Right.
But still, I think most people were probably not expecting to see the performance that he has had so far.
Yeah, he looks pretty good. Jimmy, question. There's been a lot of questions about Kyle rushing to sign him. Should they have burned this entry year? Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just bring him back next year? Shed some light on this from some of our listeners who might not fully understand the as to why now.
Well, it's a high risk, high reward. You get him in now, you do burn a year of his ELC. But you can get to signing him probably to a bridge deal a lot quicker and a lot easier. Mm-hmm. What Kyle Davidson is probably doing in both signing Slaggart and also Nazar here, he's thinking, okay, I am hedging my bet that he is not going to reach peak performance at the end of this ELC, so we can assign him to an effective bridge deal about 3-4 years, mm-hmm. and be in a position where when he's still in that contract, when he's performing how we expect him to be performing, but somehow underpaid on the second or third year of that bridge deal, we look like bandits because we are now competing. That'll probably be what, 2026, 2027. Hell, we're now competing with a guy being paid about $4.5 million a year, right, when he should be paid like $8.5 million. So, like, right, I mentioned, high risk, high reward. If it pulls off, Kyle Davidson looks like a genius. And so far, I'm liking what I'm seeing. And over the next 2 years of his ELC, he'll continue to improve, but not improve to the point where you have to shell out a 7-8 year contract for him and pay the big bucks. You can wait until his second contract to do that.
Right, exactly. And so I think the way that it works too is that you need, even if your deal ends, if you burn that first year and he plays two more years, isn't he a group two RFA after that expires? So no one can even offer sheet him if they wanted to. Like, if
I believe so. So if some other team wants to pull a Gakken and Niemi on us, you know,
right,
we can, you know, match and play the game.
Right. So you sign him now. So that way, when he's up for contract in 2 years, he can't go anywhere, no mm-hmm. matter what, even if someone offer sheets him. And I don't think that that's certainly not talked about enough. The other thing is that the players that come off contract, you know, that year, Bedard will be an RFA. He'll get paid big. Foligno and Dickinson will come off the books after that year. You don't have any idea what you're going to do with those guys, and it's fine. Foligno, you know, probably won't get a big raise at that stage of his career. Dickinson, maybe not either. You know, then Connor Murphy will also be a UFA that season. And honestly, you'll probably be done with Connor Murphy at that point.
Yeah. Well, Foligno will be 38 too. So
exactly. Even he could retire, or even if he comes back, it'll be like $1 million cap hit or something of that fabric. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. yeah. So I think it's a good move. Bardo, your early thoughts on Nazar, how you feel about it. Do you like what you see? And is this a guy that, you know, Eric, to Eric's point, sample size is really, really small. But at the same time, you know, is there actually a real shot this guy can make the club right away next year?
I mean, of course there's a shot. I mean, it's two games. Like, let's not go crazy here because, you know, he's got to go through a full training camp. He's going to have an off-season program to get, you know, more strength and work on his game, et cetera. You know, he's going to get more responsibility. The question is he going to be able to, you know, handle it? I mean, look, bigger sample sizes, look at what Lucas Reichel went through. I mean, we were all so impressed with him the last, what, 10 games that he played last season and then came in and he was horrible. So, and he looked completely lost. Could that happen? Of course it could happen. So we just have to temper our expectations We've had a nice two games with him, I'm going to kill myself. I said we. The Hawks have had a nice two games with him, but that's all it is. It's two games.
Yeah, I like that, Shawnee. If you are Kyle Davidson and you're trying to build a roster for next year, do you think that he has it in mind to possibly pencil him in right away? Because, I mean, now you're going to have money at your disposal. The UFA crop is not that fabulous. But at the same time, do you make moves assuming that this is a guy that you have to have eyes on to make the club right away? Do you hold a spot for him in a sense?
I don't think so. I don't think that's Kyle Davidson's philosophy. As we've seen with Alex Vlasic, like, I know they're forward defensemen, but Vlasic spent his cup of coffee up and then went down for a whole year. Ethan Del Mastro spent most of the year down. Colton Dock didn't come up right away. So he hasn't, like, rushed guys to the NHL. So if Nazar plays well in training camp, I think he has a real shot to make the team. But if he kind of struggles out of the gate, adjusts to, like, the full training camp schedule and stuff like that. Because think about it right now. Adrenaline's running high in this kid. Like, he went from playing in the Frozen Four to the NHL in, like, a week's time. So yeah. He's just running on this entire high.
Yeah, that's
when true. You have a whole offseason, you go through a training camp. Like, maybe the level's not there, and maybe you need some time in Rockford just to, you know, figure some things out a little bit. So I don't think they hold a spot for him.
Gotcha. Yeah, good call. Nice. I like it. The other thing to think about is Aiden Thompson and Ryan Green. Aiden Thompson from Denver, who just won a national championship, a third-round pick from the Blackhawks from a couple years ago, 22 years old. Ryan Green from Boston University also played in the Frozen Four. Those two guys have not signed with the Blackhawks. A lot of speculation. You know, that they might be returning back to BU and returning back to Denver. Is that necessarily a bad thing? I don't think it is, Eric. What do you think?
Not at all. No, I mean, guys like that, there's nothing wrong with them going back and further developing physically, further developing their games. I know there was some talk about Green possibly turning pro after BU got knocked out, but I don't think there was ever any conversation about Thompson turning pro, but yeah, from what I've seen too, it sounds like they are both going back. There's no reason to be rushing either of them. And I think they would both pretty much get just as good of development being back at school versus being in Rockford.
Yeah.
Green's going to get more responsibility because Celebrini's going to be gone. So, I mean, I don't know if he moves up to a number one center, but.
Yeah, well, he could be number one center with Cole Iserman on his flank.
Yeah,
next year, which might be a pretty good move. And Will Ander will return on defense. I mean, BU will be fine. I mean, I'm sure their commitment list is good. The other thing that's interesting to think about, and no one really talks about it this way, but you know, for someone like Frank Nazar, who will be an NHL hockey player and will probably be an NHL regular at some point. These other guys that are second or third round picks are going to have to work their way to that. If you sign right now, sure, yeah, you get a pretty nice paycheck, but you also have living expenses. And then if you do want to finish your degree, you got 2 years left on your degree if you leave after your sophomore year, and a degree now that you have to pay for instead of being a scholarship athlete. So I think there is value in staying in a program and going expense-free for at least one more year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jimmy, thoughts on EDM, Ethan Del Mastro.
Ethan Del Mastro.
Fourth round pick, had a great World Juniors last year. He's been in Rockford all year, had a great Rockford year.
Mm-hmm. All-star.
Yeah, he's been really, really good in Rockford. Was he an all-star?
He was an all-star.
Rockford's only all-star.
Yeah. HL all-star as a rookie, which is, for a young defenseman, good for him.
Very good.
Yeah, came up, and your thoughts on his performance so far. Now he's back in Rockford.
He's back in Rockford. I mean, kind of with a lot of rookies not named Connor Bedard on the Blackhawks, it's just been a pleasant surprise. I mean, it's better than watching Tenorti and Megna play, even when he does make rookie mistakes.
Oh, God.
Sorry, I brought up the two worst names on the planet.
When they
but
brutal.
I'm very hesitant with EDM. I'm very hesitant with defensemen in general. Their, you know, development curve is way different.
Yeah.
So I don't see, I see more of him being a like back and forth between Rockford and Chicago again next year, but probably a little bit more with Chicago, and kind of a similar thing that they did with who was it? They'll probably do a paper transaction next year if Rockford's in the playoffs, just to get him more playoff time. But yeah, I really like Ethan Del Mastro. He's shown responsibility. The mistakes he makes, he tries to make up for. And the mistakes he does make, you look and you go, yeah, that's a rookie defenseman mistake. Right. That's not a holy cow, you're bad at hockey mistake. So
not Isaac Phillips. Got it.
Yeah. Be careful. A little juxtaposition there.
There's some very big Isaac Phillips fans out there that when he goes back and forth, just don't quite see it the same way you do, Sean. Bardo, I mean, he didn't look out of place at all, though, did he, Bardo?
Not at all. I actually really, really was impressed with him. And defensemen are very hard to get impressed with very early. I mean, sometimes you see glimpses. Like if you look at Korchinski, we saw glimpses of him, you know, throughout the year. With Del Mastro, he just looked – and my expectation for him is maybe like a second-pairing defenseman at best. And just being a solid guy who can, you know, contribute a little bit offensively, use his size and be pretty good defense, be responsible defensively. And, you know, I saw that. I saw kind of the formation of like a total package. And I've been impressed so far. And yeah, he's going to make mistakes. I don't doubt that. But
yeah,
I actually think that he could be up much more if there's room. Much more than people think next year. I mean, like if given the choice and playing him versus like say a Wyatt Kaiser, I'm taking Del Mastro in 3 seconds. It's not even close.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean he may be one of the six or you know that comes to Chicago, you know, day one next year.
Yeah. No, in bottom six future for him, I think we're thinking once the Hawks get competitive, is that
Who was it?
No, I mean, would he be you think a bottom six defenseman ultimately in a competitive Hawks team? Or?
I would say 4 or 5, but it depends. Okay. Let's see how he develops.
Yeah, you got a while,
but I mean, maybe a 4 or 5. I mean, who knows? Maybe he develops into the next Johnny Oduya. If he does that, I mean, then he's a 4 or 5 or 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So
what? No, so he's going back for the playoff run. Yes. Who is eligible to play in the Rockford playoff run? Now, Nazar, I brought this up somewhere in our tech group. Can he not do that? I don't know what the rule is on that. Is he allowed to go to Rockford for their playoff run? Eric, you mentioned you did not see him where he was added to their playoff roster at any point. But can he just go down and do that?
I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think so. I know for guys that were under contract, you had to be on the AHL roster ahead of the trade deadline. Okay. Obviously, that was not even possible for him. So I don't know what the logistics are when you sign after the deadline.
I don't know how that whole thing works. And so Slaggart can't do it either.
Even just as far as the fit, though, I mean, like we were just saying, he's played so much hockey lately. He's kind of deer in the headlights right now. Do you want to throw him into a playoff series? And he's still not even super familiar with the Blackhawks system, which obviously they would implement in Rockford as well, let alone then now you're getting used to a whole new coaching staff, a whole new set of players, all of that. So I don't know. I mean, obviously it'd be a skill bump, but.
I think Reichel is eligible, but I think he may be playing for Germany for the World Championship.
No, he's going to go.
Oh, no, they said he was going to play for the Blackhawks. Okay.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Good for him.
And that's good. I like that.
One thing I wanted to add with Del Mastro, I didn't see all of the games when he was up, but the games that I did see, and I say this very much as a compliment, I didn't really notice him a whole lot.
Yeah, that's the best.
It's the biggest compliment you can give.
Yeah, for a young defenseman. That's it right there. No, that's pretty key. All right, let's shift real quick to the Blackhawks offseason while we still have some time before we welcome our guest. Jimmy, you got that notebook handy?
Yes.
Awesome. All right. So here we go. We're going to, what I'd like to do, we want to go through Let's go through all the guys that are under contract that we assume are coming back just based on the fact that they're under contract. Right. Maybe throw a few tradables in there, and then we go to UFAs and RFAs. How's that sound?
That sounds good. Now let's start with forwards. These are forwards under contract through next year. We got Anthony Lucio, Foligno.
Yep.
And also, this is in order of their cap hit. Oh, wait, no. Other than Hall. Hall is at the bottom. Anthony Lucio, Foligno, Dickinson, Kurashev, Donato, Bedard, Nazar, Slaggart, and Hall. Those are the guys currently under contract.
Okay.
Defensemen, we got five. We got Jones, Murphy, Korchinski, Kaiser, and, you know, EDM. And then goalies, we have same guys this year. Mrazek and Soderblom are both under contract going into next year.
Got it. I mean, Anthony Sio's around for one more year. Can that guy stay healthy? I don't. That's the only one that I'm like, if you can move him and package him, just go.
Yeah, I think Anthony Sio makes sense. Donato's kind of the same situation. His last year on contract, and he's only $2 million of a cap hit, so he might be easier to move if we do choose to move forward.
Yeah, Shawnee, are you a big Anthony Sio guy? I mean, he seems like he's 100 miles an hour at all times with no real plan.
Yeah, he is like that. The one caveat I would say to that is he plays really well with Lucas Reichel, and when Reichel has had his best like offensive output, he was with AA. So,
yeah.
I just wonder. I don't know.
Not a reason to keep them, though.
Well, there's just not, of any of those players, though, there's just not a whole lot of return unless you get really creative in some sort of trade.
I'm a big proponent of saying this on the podcast. The salary cap floor is something they're going to have to hit.
Yeah, so right.
I don't think moving any of the bigger contracts they already have on the books is in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you're right, Jimmy, to your point. If you're going to expect two names of that forward group to possibly not be here next year based on trades, Donato and Anthony Sio are the two that probably make the most sense.
Yeah. And it just depends on what teams are willing to take on or what teams are willing to give. I think Donato would be easier because you don't have to agree to try to figure out the cap floor because he's $2 million compared to FSC is like 4.3. So
is he really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's 4.25.
All right. He'll be around then.
He's going to be around. I think at best you hope that he gives you like 15 goals by the time the deadline happens, and then maybe you can eat some salary and you know, go from there. Maybe try to flip him for a mid or late round pick.
Yeah. All right, let's go UFA forwards.
UFA forwards, we have two.
Let's all collectively yay or nay on their fate.
I have Tyler Johnson.
Gone. Bye.
Nay.
Goodbye.
I'm a little hesitant, mostly because of the fourth line center role. Maybe if we just need a guy on a 1-year deal at $800,000,
yeah.
A guy that knows the system can win some faceoffs.
You think?
I wouldn't mind it if it was like, okay, 1 year, $800,000. You're sitting fourth line center just to do faceoffs.
And yeah, I mean, yeah, I
think he gets paid more than $800,000 by somebody.
He's a $5 million player right now. Plays like 800,000.
I actually think Tyler Johnson's going to end up, no joke, let's write this one down. I think he's going to get a PTO somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah. No one's going to want to pay him what he wants, and I think he's going to get a PTO.
He does have that what's his name feel. Kruger, Marcus Kruger feel to him. Where it's money runs out, bye.
Anisimov.
Yeah, might not see him in the NHL again.
He's going to show up in, like, you know, Winnipeg is on a PTO or something like that. Like, it's going to be some random freaking place.
Utah,
right.
Me too. What? Well, who's the next guy?
Colin Blackwell.
Yeah, I could see that. He can come back on the cheap and muck it up. Another injury risk.
Yeah, he screams extra forward. You plug and play.
Yeah, okay. So if they bring him back on the cheap, fine.
It's maybe a 1-year deal, but to me, it's like you have Entwistle, you have all these other guys. I just don't think that Slaggart, like, do you really need Blackwell when you have all these other guys?
No, and I don't. I mean, Entwistle and, well, he's an RFA. We'll get to that. But to your point, so those guys are, you waive them or you
qualify.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Who's next?
All right, we're now on to defenseman, Nikita Zaitsev.
Oh, bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Congrats on your $4 million. Thank you for the second round pick. Get out of here.
Yep. Enjoy the KHL.
Jarrett Tenorti, how far can I get him away from Chicago?
I know.
He was decent his first year. He's been trash this year.
He seems like such a great teammate. Yeah. He'll chuck him with anybody.
I feel like he's going to be a seventh defenseman.
He's just not a good defenseman.
He's the definition of a seventh defenseman.
Yeah. On a bad team.
Yeah. And then final one, Jason Megna.
Bye.
Yeah.
Bye. I mean, go to Zurich, man. I hear it's nice.
Yeah. I mean, those three defensemen were the definition.
Well, I don't find a cool European town to play hockey in for a couple more years.
Play with Jager.
Go see some stuff. You know, I don't know.
Obviously,
there's also probably some guys in the minors that are probably ready. I mean, if Del Mastro, one of those guys, and maybe Nolan Allen, you want to get him ready.
Yeah.
You could run Isaac Phillips back up there.
He's an RFA this offseason.
Oh, well, then he's gone.
All right. What about the great Louis Creever?
Creever back.
Yeah, Crevier. Yeah.
Louis Crevier, or also known as Louis Creever.
He's also an RFA this offseason.
He is. All right. He'll be in Rockford or with the big club.
He has to sign. If he signs with us, he has to sign his name as Louis Creever.
Louis Crevier? You couldn't even say that name correctly. Yeah, they brought up what's your dad?
Hey, I got a bit, and I'm sticking to it.
Wow.
Oh, amazing. All right. RFAs. This is where it gets tricky.
Mm-hmm. All right. First RFA, we got Lucas Reichel. I think you gotta bring him back.
Yeah, you bring him back. Yeah. And honestly, like, I don't, if he ever develops into a player, he is gonna be dirt cheap this offseason.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we got, I'm gonna mention age of all these guys too.
Oh, I like that.
So yeah. So we got 24-year-old Mackenzie Entwistle.
I mean, you sign him, but this is where you go find some help, and I don't know.
I
mean, basically, to me, you pick either him or Colin Blackwell.
I think you pick him or Reese Johnson,
because who?
Guy, and Reese Johnson has the concussion issue.
Well, then, I mean, if they're RFAs, then what do you do with them?
Reese Johnson thinks he's Reese Witherspoon these days. So,
what are your options if you don't sign an RFA? What you put him on waivers, or you offer sheet him? What do you do?
No, isn't there an RFA deadline? And by if you don't make a qualifying offer, they just become
They become UFAs.
I can sign that.
But yeah, I mean, you could sign these guys and stick them in Rockford, and then hit the cap floor another way, right? I mean, I don't.
Yeah, but at some point, like, Rockford's going to start getting crowded soon.
Yeah, well, that's what the ECHL is for.
The Indy Fuel, come on.
Yeah. And the Fuel, yeah. I get that. Basically, like, I mean, I don't know. It's fine. Like, oh, he's fine. Bring him back. We got to be better next year, though.
No,
we finally have to hit a point where there's a good on ice, a better on ice product.
Than yeah, that's why I say
years. I mean, so you can't, you know, there have to be, you know, 5 to 6 solid reinforcements next year where the Blackhawks aren't second to last in the NHL. Like, they don't have to be second to last in the NHL next year. That's all I'm saying. So Entwistle, I don't know. Sign and put in Rock Vegas.
Yeah.
And then we got for other RFAs, we got 25-year-old Reese Johnson. Jeez. Kind of same situation as Entwistle, feels like.
I think they're the same person.
Yeah.
I think Richardson likes him. But I think they should just walk away.
Who?
Who?
Luke Richardson likes Reese Johnson.
Oh.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
You ever seen Luke Richardson when he was playing?
Yeah, no, I know, but they did a whole spread on Reese Johnson, his journey to the NHL and all this other BS. But I think if between Entwistle and him, Reese Johnson is back. They're not like the conjoined twins or anything. If we sign one, we're not going to get
both.
I mean, yeah, Reese Johnson. I mean, yeah, he's got a big heart. I like him as much as I like Brandon Bolig. So, yeah, bye, Sean. He didn't like that. You didn't like Sean. Sean really hated that comment. Oh, now he's back. Okay.
He actually went to throw something. He didn't want you to see it.
Yeah, I was very upset.
All right.
Smack the hamster in the ass. That's what he didn't want to see that.
Who's next, Jimmy?
I just said Johnson. So we got 25-year-old Joey Anderson.
Yeah, bring him back. He's been good.
Yeah.
My pal Joey has been good.
I mean, I don't.
Whoa.
I don't know. There was a
You have to give credit for that, Sean.
What kind of contract is he demanding? You know, it's like, what are you we're talking about Joey Anderson.
$8 million.
Eight for eight.
So, I don't know. Okay.
Sam Bowman would give him that. So. I mean,
same Ibid. Ibid, Your Honor. Ibid.
And then final forward of the UFA is 26-year-old Taylor Radish.
Goodbye. RFA.
Yeah. RFA, right? He's an RFA or a UFA?
RFA.
RFA.
Yeah, I couldn't score in a brothel. Gone. Get him out of here.
Gone.
Wouldn't be nice. You liked him a few months ago.
I did.
He had a good, you know what? I'm guilty of that too. He had a good year last year, and he sucked like raisins this year. He was horrible.
I think Mathieu Darche and Tampa Bay are going, thank you for taking those two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boris. Now, still a good trade for everybody, but yeah.
Yes, I'll take the picks. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I feel like out of those last four that we mentioned, Entwistle, Johnson, Anderson, Radish, I think like one, maybe two of them come back.
Yep.
Kind of a potentially interesting thing about Radish that you have to keep in mind is that he's kind of like Bedard's best buddy now, since they live in the same apartment complex.
Oh,
and
he's
been a very good impact on Bedard. So yeah. I could see them bringing him back just for that reason alone. Say,
the
hey,
the Jack Haley signing.
Yeah. If you're going to be the 12th or 13th forward and you can still have that good impact on him.
Yeah.
Cool.
Dennis Rodman's My Little Pony.
When you exactly, could see some of those, like, you know, a fringe guy for a fringe guy, you know, like an Entwistle being moved to somewhere in Pittsburgh for some guy that's been up and down between
Jeremy Morin.
Bear and, yeah.
Again.
I thought you were going to say Eric Carlson.
Peter Regan.
Peter Regan. Oh, God.
But yeah.
Hey, RFAD. Are there any RFAD?
This one, it's Vlasic, and I think it's an obvious.
Oh, yeah. Pay him. As John Malkovich says in Rounders, pay him. Pay that man his money. Do it. Seriously.
Come on, break him.
Yeah. No, that's wow! What a season Vlasic's had. He's awesome. Yeah,
he's been really good.
He's been awesome.
Yeah.
And we've been back and forth in this on the pod a little bit. And Eric, you're a big proponent. Pay him now. Like, don't bridge him. Maybe just give him a little bit more. Yeah.
I don't know what more you want to see. I mean, yes, it's ultimately a one season sample size, but given what he has done this season, it's not like he's just going to regress to being mediocre next season after doing what he did this year. I mean, it'd be one thing if he was really good for half the season, then okay for the other half, but he's been excellent all season long.
Yeah.
Playing big minutes against really tough matchups and has been thriving. So I don't know what more you really want to see. So if you can get him locked up for 7 or 8 years and have that dollar amount be $5 or $6 million, do it.
I don't think it's too bold to say Alex Vlasic is one of the top young defensemen in the NHL right now.
It's better than Brock Faber.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, no. You started it.
Watch out. We might get pelted by Minneapolis.
I said what I said.
Oh, God. My Twitter.
Just admit he's not a good player, off. Okay? Come on.
So with that said, he's a first-pairing defenseman moving forward, period.
On this team, yeah.
On this team?
Yeah.
I mean, on a Stanley Cup team, is Alex Vlasic a first-pairing defenseman? He's probably a three.
Okay. So let me ask you this. So
he's
okay,
your best left-handed defenseman right now, including Korchinski.
Yeah. I mean,
follow-up question. If they draft a kid from Michigan State, is that your future number one pair?
Probably.
Okay. Yeah.
So you do have him still as a top pair. You didn't say a three. That's a top pair.
When you're
I think ideally, I mean – he's kind of like a little bit different of a style, but kind of like how Hjalmarsson was the Blackhawks three. On a lot of teams, he would have been a top pairing guy.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
And would have been fine being a top pairing guy. So I kind of see Vlasic like that, where he's maybe not like an elite premier defenseman in the league, as far as, you know, people think of, you know, a Hughes or Makar, Fox, those guys.
Right.
But he's that guy that you know exactly what you're getting. He is a very reliable shutdown guy that can also chip in a little bit on the offensive end. And yeah, I mean, I definitely see long term that he's your top pairing left defenseman and Korchinski is your second pairing left defenseman, so that he can really focus on the offensive part of the game and not have as much responsibility defensively.
That's fair. All fair.
Sign him.
Do it.
No, I think that has to be the offseason's number one priority, right?
Yeah.
Get that done.
By a mile. I mean, there's not a whole lot else to do.
So. Yep. Do it. I mean, honestly, do it. Do it first so that Minnesota panics and totally overpays Brock Faber.
And it helps you hit the floor.
Yeah. Helps you hit the floor.
Yep.
Well, and yeah, I mean, if you're Kyle Davidson, you want to build a culture of, you know,
your guys
awarding good.
Build a core. Forget about culture. Culture, yeah. Yes.
But all of the above. All of the above. You play well, we're going to pay you. We're going to take care of you.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and he's already done some of that with guys like Dickinson and even the Foligno extension and things like that. So, but you got to give your younger guys a bigger bone than that for sure. Well,
and even long-term, like we were saying, I mean, I think it's easy enough to point to Vlasic right now and say, you are going to be a big part of this in the future.
Yep.
So there shouldn't be any hesitancy to pay him.
Right. No. And I think they will.
They have the space too.
Yeah, I think we're throwing out a lot of "ooh, we hope," but that it's going to happen. Like I just don't see any other way. Well, we're hoping Mr. Hatchett will be joining us shortly. In the meantime, we could talk about Rookie of the Year.
Wait, we didn't go to. We don't have any goalies. Never mind. I'm an idiot.
Goalies. I'm actually Commesso's the one. Drew Commesso, Blackhawk prospect. Rockford's goalie right now, Boston University product. I was actually hoping that he would be coming up late in the season.
Should have got tonight's start, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Now, we did forget to talk about RFA goaltender Jackson Stauber.
John, for heck's sake.
He's been playing well for the Ice Hogs, winning a bunch of games. I know wins are generally viewed as a team stat, or should be, but I think he earns himself another contract with the Ice Hogs. I don't see why not.
Sure. Yes.
That's fair.
All right. I think Ford is here, folks, but he's at the bottom of the screen, and there he is right now. Anyway, good Hawks talk. For now, we're going to shift gears, folks. We are about to welcome Ford Hatchett to the stage. ABC 15, Phoenix, Arizona. Ford is a great broadcast journalist, went to Syracuse, great hockey player, great defenseman. He's about to join us right now to talk about the sale of the Phoenix Coyotes, the Arizona Coyotes, excuse me. Well, they're defunct now. Very sad. But in a week's time, all of a sudden now they're the Utah HC or hockey club or to be named later. So here he is. He's here right now. Ford Hatchett, welcome, my friend. How you been, buddy?
I've been good. I appreciate it, guys. I was looking forward to doing some RFA goalie talk. We'll stick to the Coyotes for now.
Yeah, right. Well, the Coyotes want Jackson Stauber. I mean, if there's an interest there, you know, he might need someone.
If he's cheap, they do want him.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's not all I could say about the Coyotes at this point. So, it's been an interesting couple weeks, couple months. Kind of started hearing some of these rumblings about a month and a half ago that this was getting serious, and the league was having some discussions. Today, we finally got confirmed from with Alex Morello, who technically is still the owner of the Arizona Coyotes and the branding, but has sold all the players and hockey operations to Utah. He confirmed today that it was Bill Daly and Gary Bettman that came down and pretty much gave him the ultimatum and said, it's time. That was early March, or March 6th, I believe, was the date he gave. And, you know, people have kind of been kept in the dark. It's, I mean, you guys, I think, know as well as anybody that bad ownership can ruin good hockey markets, and you don't have the tradition that Chicago does or another original six market. It's even more difficult, and it's just tough being in Mullet last night and seeing some of these fans who are diehard and haven't had much to cheer for over the years. Breaks your heart a little.
Yeah, tell us about that. I mean, because you know we've grown up with tales of friends with the Hartford Whalers, of now your beloved Carolina Hurricanes, and then you know the Jets had an exit and then they came back. But you know, we obviously, you know, saw you on the street interviewing some fans and talking to them. It seemed like a lot of excitement before the game, but then I'm sure that turned to a very melancholy atmosphere last night. Can you just kind of walk us through some of what you saw and fan reactions and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, it was bittersweet, right? I think, you know, ticket prices to get in the door were, by the time that an hour before puck drop, they had dropped to about $550 to get you through the door. Earlier in the week, they were up over 1,000. I mean, it only seats 4,500 people. I think the thing that's going to stick with me for a while is a couple of the kids we saw. I saw one family that flew back in from Boston. They had been Coyotes fans, now live in the Northeast, flew back in. And for the youngest son, he had a shirt on that said, "My first Coyotes game." And then on the back, it said also, "My last Coyotes game."
That's brutal. Yeah.
And there was another guy we talked to who another situation, grew up cheering for the Coyotes, you know, would go on and on talking about the 2012 run to the conference finals. He said he got his tax return and spent all of it, a little more, flying back out and buying a ticket to get inside Mullet last night. And there were tears in there. And, you know, it was good to see them get a win. I think that I would have been really bummed had they gone off any other way. And it was almost fitting for the people that couldn't get inside, and, you know, the majority of hockey fans who weren't going to drop close to a grand to get inside. There was talk of a watch party the team was going to organize, and it really wasn't until a couple hours before the team scrapped that plan. And so it was kind of left to Coyotes fans again. So there were Coyotes fans a couple blocks away that brought out a projector, and there were a couple hundred Coyote fans that gathered and brought lawn chairs and sat around and watched the projector, and kind of how it's been the whole nearly three decades they've been here. It was left to the fans to do it themselves. And there were, there's some bitterness too. There were some Salt Lake sucks chants, some Utah sucks chants, and obviously they're not actually upset at Utah or Salt Lake. It's just a crummy situation for these folks.
Oh man. You mentioned this has been happening over, you know, a month and a half or so, but to the general public, it was literally a week where it was just like, whoa, what's happening here? And it seems like there were some efforts, you know, to get a new arena, which was absolutely necessary. And it sounded like from Gary Bettman's comments later on today that they were just saying, we just can't do this in a college arena. Go ahead.
The efforts are still going to get a new arena, right? So Alex Morello has now sold the players, and it was important to him to retain. And he's not a very popular figure here, obviously, but he's, you know, making the rounds today to maintain his commitment to bringing NHL hockey back to the Valley. He said he's going to continue to fund the youth programs. They're planning to move the Tucson Roadrunners up to play in Mullet. Just talked to somebody on the phone minutes ago in Tucson who says, well, they haven't told us that yet, right? But Morello is going around saying it, which is kind of par for the course. But it's, you know, it kind of all did develop quickly. It was very important to him. Once the league said you have to, you know, the team's got to move on. He's still going to try to bid on this land auction to build a new arena, hopefully get a team back. From what I understand, everything has kind of soured a little bit from the vote in Tempe last May. You know, they were very confident that they were going to win that vote. There was an aggressive campaign from folks in the community that didn't want it. And the Coyotes, frankly, were late to the party and on brand again, a little cheap, and didn't invest much money in any sort of campaign. Thought they kind of had it in the bag. And to be fair, I think most of the voters you talked to in that situation assumed it was a lot of money, taxpayer money, going to a billionaire to build a stadium, which really wasn't the case at all. But once that narrative was out there, it was hard for them to beat. And from there, the NHL, from what we understand, kind of issued an ultimatum. Hey, we need a plan in place by January. The Coyotes ID'd this set of land going to bid on, but it ended up being too expensive when they initially wanted 200 acres. They had to shrink it. That starts the process all over again. So instead of having a plan in place in January, the plan's not in place till late March. The auction won't take place till late June. And that just is too long for the NHL to wait for what is still a maybe until we get to the auction.
Oh, okay.
Hey Ford, I know you said something about the campaign. I heard, correct me if I'm wrong, people in Arizona were spending more money than the Coyotes to campaign against the arena?
I'll tell you, the no campaign was and you can go back and look at the campaign finance report. They did spend more than the Coyotes did. And it came from a number of different places. And, you know, just from talking to people inside the organization, there was a reluctance from ownership to spend, you know, and we're not talking millions on the campaign. I think that, you know, they were haggling over a couple $1,000s at points, right? With an owner who now wants to go spend a couple hundred million on a new plot of land. They were haggling over about $50,000 was what they thought made the difference, and they didn't want to spend it. And it just, again, I think they thought they had it in the bag. They were very confident on that election night. I'll never forget being in there and seeing the mood shift when those first numbers were posted, because it became pretty clear that this was not going to pass. And they didn't have a plan B at that point. They'd invested everything in this. And just to speak to kind of how cheap it was, they had players and team employees canvassing and knocking on doors in the days leading up to the vote. It was, you know, the no campaign had professional canvassers and the Coyotes had Lawson Krause knocking on your door.
Hmm. Oh, wow. My goodness.
That's crazy. First, thanks for coming on. I mean, this is awesome. So really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, my pleasure.
One question I have, and I've seen some discord about this on social media from Coyotes fans. So I'm curious to know or hear your thoughts about how people there are kind of handling this. A lot of people seem to be torn about, do we, as Coyote fans, cheer for Utah or do we not? Do we support the players that were here that are now going to Utah? Do we just break ties? How is that kind of being viewed by the Coyotes fan base?
I think people are split, right? And I think part of the struggle for the Coyotes fan base is the Coyotes have stopped forever, right? There's the 2012 run, and that's not it. And especially the last few years, let alone the off-ice stuff, the team stunk, and intentionally so, right? They've been rebuilding. And now, especially the second half of the season, I know they went through a rough patch, but, you know, Dylan Gunther gets called up in 2024, and he's going to finish with, I think, 19 goals. Logan Cooley hits 20 goals in his rookie season. And there's that young core, especially up front, that's really – it's going to be a good team. You can see it. And Andre Tourney is a real good coach. And I think they're going to have some success. And I think part of the frustration is, man, we've put so much time investing into the awful years that now when they're about to take the jump, somebody else gets to have it. So it really is. It's kind of a debate that I think it goes 50-50 depending on which fan you talk to and maybe which day you talk to which fan.
Maybe the one thing – ask Quebec Nordiques fans how they feel, you know.
Yeah, well, actually, you mentioned I grew up in North Carolina. I never would have known hockey without the Hurricanes, and I fell in love with them. And I could never understand why all these people in Hartford hated us so much. And I tell you what, in the last 48 hours, I get it. Like, I don't really want to cheer for Utah, right? Mm-hmm. Those guys stole this. And we were talking about it last night. I think one of the most exciting things, and this may be glass half full from us folks in Arizona, is that if Arizona does get a new team, that rivalry with Utah is going to be real. And there's going to be some animosity there, at least in the fan bases. That'll be fun, but it is, it's a young team and, you know, they haven't made the playoffs in a while and I got a feeling you may see them there next year.
Hey, Ford, thanks again, first of all, for coming on. One question I had, and you know, we know about the arena issues. We know about the owner issues. Is there a story that's not or some point that's not being talked about as much as to the reason why they left, you know, some sort of some nugget out there that's not being talked about, but is a reason sort of behind the scenes that as to why they're moving?
Well, and I think it goes back to Glendale. I think there's reporting out there that the Coyotes didn't pay their bills. And there's some truth to that, but really there was a deal still to be had in Glendale before Glendale evicted them. Glendale wanted the Coyotes to sign a long-term lease to stay in Desert Diamond Arena. And depending on who you talk to, it was either somewhere between 12 and 20 years. Coyotes didn't want to do that. Glendale's not a good spot for hockey here. Most of the fans are in the East Valley, just not to get too geography, but you can play a football season with the Arizona Cardinals in Glendale because it's 8 times a year and on a Sunday. There aren't a lot of people that want to make the 40-minute drive in rush hour on a Tuesday to see Columbus in Glendale, right? So it's harder when you have to do it 40 nights a year. So they really wanted to move to the East Valley, which would be Tempe, Scottsdale, East Phoenix. So they didn't want to stay in Glendale that long. Mm-hmm. The Coyotes gotten to a point where, you know, Alex Morello is not the most popular figure with the fans or with the business community, I think. He can rub people the wrong way. And there got to a point in the negotiation where he made it clear that he didn't want to sign long-term. Mm-hmm. Glendale kind of told him, well, that's what's on the table. And he told him to kick rocks. They told him to kick rocks. And, you know, eventually there was a point where there was a chance last year they could have come back to the table, but they were not going to be negotiating with each other. Glendale said, hey, we'll work with Shane Doan or maybe the CFO of the Coyotes, but we don't want to negotiate with you. And Morello said, well, hey, if you don't want to negotiate, it's with me. And so the relationship kind of fractured. And I think that's really where – I don't know this for certain, but just speculating. If they were still playing in Desert Diamond in Glendale, it wouldn't be ideal. The building probably wouldn't be full, but it would be serviceable to go and win a land auction and have a plan. You could play in that arena. It's an NHL arena. It's not perfect, but it's an NHL arena. what you can't
one do follow-up, which you may have sort of answered, is why wasn't Footprint Center ever considered? Is it just not made for hockey?
That's a great question. That's exactly so. They originally, when they first moved from Winnipeg, played there, and it's very similar to the building they'll be going to in Utah with obstructed seats. You can't see anything. And Robert Sarver, the former owner of the Suns, was not a big fan of hockey. And even in the most recent renovations, and every renovation they've done since, and in the most recent renovation, made it even more difficult to bring hockey back. So they did renovations in COVID in 2020 and 2021. They would have to do about $300 million in new renovations to make it suitable for hockey. Wow. So it's something, I don't think the door's been closed. The new owner, Matt Ishbia, has said that if the team's ever available for sale, he could consider it. But it wasn't something that was a realistic possibility in the immediate future.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Ford, do you see, when you think about recourse, you think about what happens after this, September is going to roll around. There's not going to be any preseason. There's just going to be, you know, no hockey come opening night in the NHL in the desert. Do you see any scenarios? I mean, you see some buzzing saying, yeah, hockey could really return to the desert. There's still a good market there. Do you see scenarios, and what would have to happen, and what would have to happen within a 5-10 year period for that to be a reality?
Yeah, I think that, and the kind of got the clearest answers we're going to get from the NHL today. Alex Morello has 5 years where if he can get an arena built, if he can buy this land and do it, he's going to get a team back. It'll be an expansion team that'll be called the Arizona Coyotes. They'll draft players and they'll be the Arizona Coyotes. But he's got to get an arena. And, you know, just behind the scenes stuff, I'm not sure there's a lot of confidence on the league side or in city government side here that he's going to actually be able to do it. There are a lot of hoops to jump through between winning the auction. And this is a valuable piece of land right near the Mayo Clinic. There are going to be other bidders. And so he's going to have to win the auction. You have to pay for infrastructure yourself. That's going to cost you about $80 million on top of whatever you bid to win the land. They've got to get an arena built one way or another. There are other groups I know and have chatted with a few folks who are prominent figures in the hockey community here that are working on kind of a backup plan of other trying to generate money that can maybe find another arena plan. I would be stunned if the NHL isn't back here in 20 years, but I think, you know, you talk with people in Seattle who are basketball fans, I think they would have been stunned if the NBA wasn't back in Seattle when the Supersonics originally left, right? The plan is to get back here, but you've got to get an arena built, and that requires not just someone with the money, but that requires some help from government and people to be invested in it. So I'm confident and hopeful that hockey will come back here because it's a great base and the youth programs are amazing. It was great to see kids still walking to practice this morning as we were around at Coyotes exit interviews. But it's not a sure thing. And we won't know for a while if it is.
So what happens first? Hockey returns to Phoenix, or the Utah hockey team, as we will know it, wins the Stanley Cup?
I hate to be a wagering man, but especially the way you hear the folks in Utah, and I don't claim to have any sources with the Smith Group or anything like that, but it sounds like they're ready to spend. And that's been something that has been not the Coyotes' forte recently. And as I mentioned, they've got a young core on some good, cheap deals. If they go and invest this summer, I mean, I think they're a playoff team next year. And who knows? Once you get in, anything can happen, right? So just because this future is so uncertain in the Valley, I'd say I'd bet on Utah before I bet on a team back here.
Yeah. We were reading 6,000 deposits on season tickets within 2 hours.
It's crazy. And
just for perspective, that's about 1,500 more people than Mullet Arena holds. So it's it's already a win for the NHL.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the youth hockey market, you know, in Phoenix, and a lot of, you know, Arizona kids, you know, growing up hockey players. You certainly grew up a hockey player in Carolina, which probably would have been unthinkable in the 1980s. How damaging could that be to future hockey players?
Yeah. And I think that was the big concern. I think part of that, it's nice to hear that Morello will continue to fund the youth hockey programs because not just the Junior Coyotes, but they're the Junior Sun Devils, and there are lots of it's a flourishing youth hockey market. Honestly, when I first moved here, I was stunned. I mean, there are probably 10 rinks within 30 minutes of downtown Phoenix. There's high school hockey here, which we still don't have in North Carolina. You know, obviously, let alone Matthew Nyes and Austin Matthews, kids that grew up here and have gone on a great career, even the college players that are now coming out of this place. it is a good youth hockey market, and I'm confident with the infrastructure they've set up that that's not going to stop. But you wonder, the kids that are already playing aren't going to quit. I think that's pretty sure. But now it's the question of the kids who are now coming up that aren't going to get the chance to go watch the Coyotes. Are they going to get invested, you know, watching LA play Utah on TV and hopefully then want to go to a rink? I don't know. And you hope, you know, Arizona State hockey is a fun event too. And if the Roadrunners are in town, that's exciting. It remains to be seen just how it will affect that next generation.
Wow. And you fellas got any other questions for Ford while we've got him here?
Yeah. Hey, Ford, I forgot to say thank you for coming on earlier, but do you think another ownership, like Morello has the rights to the Arizona Coyotes, is there another ownership group that could come in and put a team in the East Valley without being the Arizona Coyotes?
The struggle that they would find is that they'd have to get Board of Governor approval to, you know, have a franchise, right? They're not going to get that in the next 5 years, which, frankly, it's going to be a tough sell to get an arena built in the next 5 years anyway. So I think Morello's got the next five-year window, and I think there are going to be a few groups that are going to be sitting and waiting in the wings, and I don't know if they're going to be cheering for him to fail, but if he fails, they're going to be ready to pounce and say, hey, it's our turn. What happens there? We've learned today Morello cannot sell his first refusal right. He can't sell the name of the Coyotes here in the first 5 years. We don't know exactly what that looks like if it does fall apart in 5 years. But if it's going to come back in the next 5 years, it sure sounds like, barring some massive change or change of heart from the commissioner or Morello himself, it would have to be Alex Morello coming back. I know it doesn't enthuse hockey fans in the Valley all that much.
So he can sell at any time, but he has the namesake of the Coyotes for a five-year period. Is that how that works? I just don't fully.
So he has the namesake of the Coyotes for a five-year period. Technically, they are still an NHL team. He will still be on the Board of Governors calls. He's still an owner. He will not have a vote, and it is an inactive franchise. So the deal is that if in the next 5 years he has a fully capable state-of-the-art NHL arena, they will reactivate the franchise, find a way to get players on the team, an expansion draft, lack of a better word, and then the team will be back. Anything beyond 5 years is, I think, then it's fair game, right? Then we become Atlanta. Then we become Houston. And it's kind of a open season. But for the first 5 years, it's Alex Morello's gig, and it's the inactive Arizona Coyotes that we're talking about.
It almost sounds like some things we've seen in the AHL, I want to say, where they basically paused franchises for a number of years and then brought them back for whatever reason. Like, I think like the Binghamton Rangers or the maybe as the Hamilton Bulldogs. I don't remember who it was, but it's kind of the same scenario that you would see in the minors. I think they've kind of taken that blueprint and tried to.
That's a great comparison. Yeah, it's almost exactly like that. And part of it is just legally, I don't think the NHL felt very solid on their footing of being able to force Alex Morello to sell without a big litigious fight, because that's the type of guy Alex is. He's fiery and he believes in himself, and he would fight for what he thinks is right. And so this is a way that kind of appeases Alex. Morello's happy. The league gets what they want. Ryan Smith gets a team, and it all kind of works out, and everybody's okay. And we'll just have to see what happens. And again, I think for the NHL, so win-win. Either Alex Morello gets this done and they get what they want. They come back into the fifth largest city in the country, a growing market and a great TV market for the next deal. Or Alex fails and then they're rid of him. You know, they don't have to deal with him anymore after the 5 year mark.
Now it's only an expansion team, right? It's not going to be a relocated team, right?
As far as we know, now the plan for Utah was to be an expansion team. Right. Situation arrived. So I don't want to close the door on if some other market finds itself struggling, but I would be, you know, I would set the wagering at it's about 95% chance that's an expansion team. I'd be surprised if it's a relocated team.
I agree. I think it's what it is too.
Yeah. Will you go cover a Utah game next year, Ford?
No, I'm sure going to lobby for it. We'll see if we want to book the flight. It's, you know, we were talking, it's funny. We got the TV rights to the Coyotes this year. When Bally Sports folded, it was our station that kind of negotiated. We brought in some new folks that were exclusively covering the Coyotes. And, you know, that's the part that hits home. I've got two coworkers now. I don't know what they're doing next year. I know many people in the organization who, you know, the hockey ops side is going to have the chance to move. But the business side is not. The business side are all looking for jobs right now and have been for probably a week. And talking to them right now, it's tough. And even people in the hockey ops side, I think everybody saw Stan Wilson, the longtime equipment manager. He relocated from Winnipeg to Phoenix. And he's I think I'm fair to say now, he's decided he's not going to Salt Lake. And so you saw the players kind of honor him last night. And it's just tough. And it's a situation for everybody involved. And it's not ideal. And the fans, not least of which, are really hurt right now. But there are a lot of folks that nobody had signed up for this, right?
Yeah. I do have to give a shout out to Todd Walsh, because his closing, which I was all over social media, was, if you haven't had a chance to look at it, I mean, it hits home. It was really, really well done. And that hit home for me. So I don't know I'm sure you had a chance to see it, unless you were there literally live. So
we were out there live, and I got some text right away that I needed to go home and watch Walsh's closing. And him and Tyson both, I think they were fighting tears when we talked a little bit pregame, and they did an incredible job. It's funny, Tyson Nash, the color commentator here, you know, had Matthew Nyes over at his house growing up. They were his kid and Matthew were on the same youth team. I mean, he's watched this place grow in the hockey market from being somewhere where people didn't know the hockey existed to now producing high level NHLers. And so it's tough for those guys as well, who have made a home here. And, you know, seeing Shane Doan last night walking around and chat just briefly with Shane, and, you know, he's now left the organization on less than, I shouldn't say that, not less than stellar terms, but, you know, it wasn't ideal. He didn't want to leave. Right. And for him to come back and see his son almost relive his journey. Shane played 40 games in Winnipeg and then moved to Phoenix. And he said that he told Josh, go do the same thing, make a new home in Salt Lake. But Shane's home is still here, and I know he heartbroken last night as well.
Yeah, Tyson's comments, I was listening to I was watching the game in the first period. I think he was talking about it right before they scored the first goal. Place went nuts also, but which was great to hear. But then, yeah, I mean, he was like really talking about the passion in the market and really what the market is losing with the team relocating. And, you know, you felt it. I mean, and I know Tyson's always been, you know, as a broadcaster, you know, someone who's been very passionate about hockey there. So I feel for him.
You know, I'm the biggest homer for non-traditional hockey markets and hockey in the South, because, you know, otherwise I wouldn't have gotten into the sport and a lot of my friends wouldn't have. But it's tough when you don't win. You know, I grew up in Raleigh, and, you know, the 06 Cup was great, and there were some real dark years where they could have moved, right? And now they're on track, and it's a loud building, and it's an awesome hockey market. Mm-hmm. And you just never really got that. You just never got the chance with a really loud, passionate playoff building consistently. And I think that's what kind of sinks it. And I don't want to put this all on Alex Morello, because there are a lot of sins of owners past that he had to put with as well. But they just never gotten the owner right. They've never gotten the thing right. And just hasn't.
Yeah.
One thing I'm kind of curious about, I know I stayed up and watched the whole game last night and watched you know, the jersey offer back ceremony and all of that. You know, so people outside of the Phoenix area saw things like that. But, you know, you being there, can you share a little bit about kind of what things looked like maybe even later in the night after that, as far as, you know, how fans were just kind of reacting to the reality? And I know I saw a video, some fans sticking around the parking lot, wishing the players well as they left and things like that. Anything else you can speak to?
Yeah. Well, and personally, I was a little disappointed just in, again, the team that the watch party didn't happen. And if you were in the building, it kind of just felt like any other end of season game. You know, there were, like I mentioned, Shane Doan was in the building. Ray Whitney was in the building. There weren't really any trips to the Coyotes pass that came. We didn't see a lot of clips over franchise history. It was just, hey, here's the Man of the Year award winner. Here's, you know, what we did this year, and almost without saying it, we'll see you next year send off, which clearly wasn't the case, and the fans didn't expect that. But in the building, it was sad, and people didn't want to leave. I mean, we had to go outside to do some live reporting at 10 o'clock just for our show, so I didn't get to stay as long as I would have liked, but we were there till 30 minutes after the game. And the building was still pretty much full. The Edmonton had filed out, but all the Arizona fans were still in there. And even as they did come out, you know, it was hard to see, because it was, again, so bittersweet. It was so great to see the team get a win with some young pieces contributing. But then you saw some kids coming out who were crying, and knew it was over. That was it. and that hurts. That hurts to see. And, you know, it's not fair to them, and it's not fair to the families, and it's not fair to any of the fans here. And it was tough. And you did see the fans that stuck around and sent the players off. And I think there was a big ovation for Bill Armstrong, the general manager. I think he's been kind of one of the folks that fans have gotten some news from, at least. And they're going to miss him. And you know, I think even after folks finally left the arena, there were people who were just kind of hanging out and didn't want to go drive home quite yet. You know, the players were gone. The arena was empty. It's on Arizona State's campus. Kids are getting ready to go to class in a few hours, right? And folks are still sitting in the parking lot. It was sad to see. And I think once folks exited the building, it was that realization of this is it. And it was a win that really felt like a loss. And you know, it was cool to see. There was one moment before the start of the third period at the outdoor watch party. There was one last howl where all the fans kind of, as one pack, gave a big howl into the night outside. And it was cool to see. And again, for a team that hasn't found much success, they've got a diehard passionate fan base that deserve better.
Ford, if I recall, I think the Phoenix Suns owner tried to buy the Coyotes not too long ago. Was that, am I mistaking that?
So I don't think he ever officially tried to buy it. I think there has been some, I think he's calls saying, hey, would you be interested? And I think there were especially some calls, hey, would you be interested in just renovating the Footprint Center and letting them come play there? And again, it's going to cost $300 million or so. And I think the answer that he's given is that if the team were ever available for sale, he would be, you know, he'd consider it. I don't think he'd say he's going to jump right in and buy them, but it'd be a conversation he'd be willing to have. I don't think he's looking to renovate Footprint Center otherwise, just because with both the WNBA Mercury and the Suns and the concerts they do, there's not a lot of downtime to do it. It would be a pain for something that you don't know you're getting, and I don't think he'd want to share it with another owner. But I don't think the door's closed on that possibility either.
But I guess my question also is, what are the other three owners of the major sports teams, what has their reaction been to this in terms of, you know, moving? Because obviously it impacts them.
Definitely. And so we haven't heard from Michael Bidwell with the Cardinals or Matt Ishbia with the Suns yet today, once the news has become official. Just what I gather, I mean, they're upset. They're bummed. We did hear from Ken Kendrick, who's the owner of the Arizona Diamondbacks. And in a statement today, he said again, they're upset. They think this market deserves all four major sports. And they're upset to see that all the parties involved didn't come together to find a solution. Couch that with the fact that Ken Kendrick is also looking for a new building and a new area. And I think the cynic in me would say Ken Kendrick may be taking advantage of this situation to say, hey, look, we're down to three, could be down to two if we don't get our money for a new arena up in North Phoenix or a new stadium up in North Phoenix for the Diamondbacks. If you're a cynic, again, I'm maybe reading in between lines too much there. But he's the only owner we've heard from publicly. The other owners, though, I understand are upset because it does diminish the market in some capacity, even if the Coyotes are the fourth most popular team here on most years. And again, I think they could be more popular if they would just win.
Amazing. Well, Ford, thank you so much for the recap. I mean, we see the stuff in the news, we follow it, but I mean, to be in the thick of things and particularly to talk about how it's affecting people. I mean, we're all Blackhawks fans. I mean, the majority of the time that we're on here, we're talking Hawks, and none of us could ever, particularly that grew up being Blackhawks fans, could never envision a scenario. I'll never say never, but where we're walking out of the building for the last time and just like, it just doesn't exist anymore. And so, you know, we've certainly, or I'll use I language, you know, I've certainly been one of those that saying, why is that team still there? Why can't they get it together? Why are they playing in a college rink and they should move on? You know, their other owners are subsidizing this, et cetera, with the collective bargaining agreement. But, you know, to have that human element of it, you know, we often don't talk about those things, and to see that firsthand, I just, you know, to thank you for shedding light on that. Cause it's gonna be really tough to stomach for a lot of the fans. So
I'm with you. And when moving here and even being here, if you go 100 feet back and look at it, just the finances don't make sense. It was time to go. I understand why the league had reached its boiling point. But again, I mean, we saw today Morello was in town. He finally met with team employees for the first time since any of this broke. First time they've heard from him. And after the meeting, we were over at Coyotes headquarters, and you see people start to walk out with boxes. And it just kind of hits you that it's over, right? Mm. And you know, there's something that a lot of these people have spent their whole lives in, and at least, you know, there are people in that organization I know have worked there for 25 of the 28 years that they've been in town, and now they've got to figure out something new to do, and a lot of families that, you don't really want to move somewhere else. So it'll be interesting to see, and I'm cheering for all the folks that are in a situation like that. It's not ideal, but again, as you mentioned, you understand it probably was time for the team, and hopefully with a fresh slate, they can come back and things can be a little better and Hockey in the Desert can work again.
Yeah. Well, hope that as long as you're working in the desert, that hockey returns soon. You get to as many Arizona State games as you can, but then an NHL team arrives on the scene, it's far more solvent, and that things are in a much better position. Before we let you go, Ford, and before we close up shop for the night, one last question. There's two people regulars on this pod that predicted a certain team to go to the Stanley Cup Finals out of the East this year. And so two questions. For the love of your life, Carolina Hurricanes, is this the year that they reach the Stanley Cup Finals? And there's another person on this pod that is very steadfast. It's not me. Jacob Slavin is the most underrated, undervalued defenseman in the game of hockey today. Is it the year, and do you feel that way about Slavin?
I'll start with Slavin first. I would tend to agree. He makes just about everybody better, and you know, you see the Brent Burns renaissance. I think that's not in no small part to Jacob Slavin and the fact that Tony D'Angelo was traded for a couple second-round picks just a season ago is the Jacob Slavin effect. So I would agree with you there, and that D-core is pretty stacked. So you hope that they can get it done in the playoffs. You hope that the Gensel addition is enough. You hope that the goaltending holds up. Freddie's been great since coming back, but you just never know. And, man, the Hurricanes, as a franchise in their history, do not have a great track record in Madison Square Garden. So I know there are a lot of Caniacs that are hoping that somehow those pesky Caps could get something off. And if the Hurricanes can get through the Islanders, which will be no small feat the way they're playing right now, that it isn't the Rangers waiting for them, because that's about the nightmare scenario for them, especially against Peter Laviolette, a guy Hurricanes fans still admire a bunch and know the damage he can do.
Yeah. Good call.
So I guess that's a cop-out to say I hope so, but I'm not optimistic if they run into the blue shirts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. That's a pretty good take. Yeah. And we all agree with you. I was calling Eric's the biggest Slavin supporter out there, and he's right, by the way. Yeah. Eric, I should give you credit. That wasn't a jab.
No, Slavin, no. I mean,
awesome.
it's both objective and subjective because he's a personal friend of mine, Ford. So
an awesome guy from everything I heard. You know, I've a few times, but terrific human from what everybody says. And again, I'm glad he gets some of the recognition now, because there were those years they weren't making the playoffs where he was just good on some bad teams. And it's stuff you don't always see in the highlight reel. So it's glad that he's getting the props around the league now.
Yeah, he's awesome. Ford, can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Really, really appreciate it, and especially in such a timely manner. After an afternoon text from an old buddy, and then all of a sudden we're here. So Ford Hadgett, ladies and gentlemen, as we mentioned, from ABC 15 in Phoenix, thank you so much for your coverage of the Coyotes. We're very sorry again your last few weeks. I mean, this is someone who covered the Final Four in Phoenix while his NC State Wolfpack were in it. Whole family flew out there. I bet that was fun to see all of them.
That was good. Well, and that was the weird part, is you're standing in State Farm Stadium, and 50 feet away is an empty NHL arena in Glendale. And so, again, it just kind of sunk home as all this went down. But, no, it's been a crazy few weeks, and we're not used to losing things here in the Valley. It's normally adding or having more big events in Phoenix. So this is a new feeling. But Valley fans are good, and I know the hockey fans will still be here when an NHL team does make it back. So appreciate you guys having me and carving out the time. Great work, and keep it up, fellas.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Ford.
Thank you.
So with regards to you Hawk fans tonight, enjoy the final game of the season. Let's hope for a win, since they're already second to last. And at any rate, let's hope that they can close it down. And thanks very much for joining us tonight. And we will be back as the offseason begins with and the draft, with more draft analysis. Pay attention to anything that Eric Andrews is putting out there with regards to the draft. He is our prospect guru. And make sure that that you're reading up on things at the rink. Fellas, any final thoughts or anything before we declare victory for the evening?
Shout out to Monmouth College. Like I said, I was saying earlier before my hamster wheel went out, my college's founding day is today. So happy Founders Day to all the Fighting Scots that listen to the pod and just there in the world.
Awesome.
Looking forward to the playoffs starting this weekend, of course. It's the best time of the year, so always fun. I'll give a shout out on behalf of Sean to the great Matt Tompkins for preventing Austin Matthews from getting 70 last night.
All right. Way to go, Matt.
He did give up four, but, you know, they won 6-4, so.
Yeah. And if we do not podcast again, we're hoping to come back because we'll have more NHL playoffs to talk about. But in the event that we do not podcast again until the middle of May, which is not the hope, congratulations to new Rinkcast member Jimmy O'Malley on his upcoming graduation from law school. Incredible.
I'll be able to put my name down as James O'Malley Esquire.
That is awesome. Always wanted to do that. But
add some legitimacy to the show.
Yep. The JD from Marquette University. Congratulations. That's really exciting, man.
Thank you. That's awesome. Long journey.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. All right, folks. Well, thanks very much for joining us. Go Hawks for one final time this season. It will get better. It will get better. It's going to be a while, but it'll get better.
But these are the days you get to brag to the front runners about. You get to say you saw this crap and you earned it.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, if anybody says that Blackhawk fans are front runners, they were like third in the league this year in attendance.
That's far out. Exactly.
You know what? F off. Mic drop.
He's back. Bart's back.
Big Bart.
He's buttoned up for 40 minutes.
Big Bart, guys.
All right. Well, thanks, folks, for listening. And hope to talk to you soon. Have a great night.